can't define me or define my work as a father. I'm many things, you know. I'm many things. Yeah, I'm a convicted rapist. I'm a hellraiser. I'm a father, a loving father. I'm a semi-good husband. You know what I mean? What? You know what I mean? I'm just a man out here trying to enjoy my. I was born poor. I ain't never had nothing, man. I don't know how to act. All right. But the real thing is, I'm just here to be me. I don't care what
you think
I am or who anyone thinks I am. At this stage of my life, but I'm a pretty much of a tyrant titan. Yeah, that's who I am.
Guys, I stopped locking your ass when you got on that bitch and started crying. You fucking soft ass nigga.
Shut that soft ass shit up. All that soft talking. I know you can do it, man. You got the. Let's shut that soft ass shit up, man. You ain't with me.
I was trying, don't get me wrong.
What about when this one man was around?
Like I said, I was trying. They had promoters that didn't bring them to my side and wouldn't allow me to come to this side unless it was on his turn.
Chris, would you have been interested?
Before we get to that.
See,
my name is well known.
What's that? Can you smell that?
Hey people, and welcome back to the number one podcast in the sport where, we're going to talk about Eddie Hearn today. Not for the whole episode, but we're going to start with him. Because I see the standard Matchroom FC kind of, I don't even know what you call them now, twerkers. We'll call them twerkers. They remind me of Jaden Alexis. If you don't know who Jaden Alexis is, Find Jaden Alexis on YouTube. Most infectious song of the year by some distance. But here's where we're going to start with Eddie Hearn. Right? He announces the signing of Jerome Ennis. And I see people jumping up and down. And this is... There's a lot of passion amongst boxing fans, but there's often not a lot of intelligence. And there's definitely not a lot of critical thinking. Jerome Ennis feels like a big signing. But is he a bigger signing than having Conor Benn on your roster already? I would argue no. And here's why. Let me outline my logic for that. So Jerome Ennis is 26 years old. So he's getting into that prime kind of should be a bona fide world champion. Or on that path to becoming a bona fide world champion in his weight class. But we look at his record. He's what, 31, 32 fights into his career? And like he's fought guys the level of Chris Van Heerden and probably no one better. People say Lipnitz is better. Is he really? And Thomas Delorme, the same guy that had to bring up for Crawford to look good against. Nah. Would you argue that Jerome Ennis has faced better opposition than Conor Benn? Not recently. I think they're probably in the same ballpark. That's not a bad thing, by the way. But look at Conor Benn's commercial appeal. Yes, he's in limbo at the moment because of the clomiphene issue. But imagine Conor Benn is allowed to box this summer. You know for a fact that the O2 sold out. You know for a fact. Doesn't even matter who he fights. It's sold out. What's Jerome Ennis going to sell out? And I'm not saying this because I don't like Jerome. I think he's a talent. I think he's super, super talented. I'm just going to make this argument. Al's not letting him go. If there's a path to making money off Jerome Ennis. I don't believe he jumped. I believe he was nudged. And when people say I'm talking out my backside, let's go again. 31 contests. Not once was he positioned to be the next guy in charge. He didn't fight a Thurman. He didn't fight a Garcia. He hasn't fought an Ugas. They didn't dig up Andre Berto for him. They didn't dig up Robert Guerrero for him. They didn't even dig up Adrian Broner. And that's normally what happens. Even if you go back to the Don King playbook, you dig somebody up. Mike Tyson got Larry Holmes. Evander Holyfield got Larry. And he got George. They didn't do that for Jerome Ennis. His record isn't one that says, here's the heir apparent. right? And bear in mind, there was all of that litigation before. So I would argue, and I may be wrong on this, Jerome probably still has to pay whoever it was. Was it Gary Cohen? He had to pay his former manager like a chunk of his money. And so it's like, well, why are we paying Jerome just to pay somebody else? We don't control him. And so his career's drifted. Yeah, his career's drifted. Like Conor Ben's career is drifting now. His is drifted. And I know people say he's the IBF interim champ. Okay. Who's he going to fight for the full title? Conor Ben? Is that what they're going to do? Because Conor Ben is top 10 in the world at welterweight if you look on BoxRec. Crazy. Conor Ben is top 10. Wow. So Conor Ben is top 10 in the world, meaning that there's not many options for Jerome Ennis. Do you know what I mean? What? I can't believe people are buzzing about this, because I look at that welterweight division and everyone's gone. Yes, they tell us Crawford's still a 147, Spencer's still a 147. They're not really. Like, they're done with that division. There's nothing left to do. So who is it then? Who's next up? Who are they meant to be building? This is what I don't understand. Do you mean like Mario Barrios? Those sorts of people? Guys that we don't know about and don't care about. David Avanesyan. You put him in with that, but we weren't even that impressed when he fought Crawford. But Avanesyan, I think, is a good, solid fighter that I've got a lot of time for. But that's not of the class that Spence had to go through. These guys aren't the level of a Sean Porter, Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman, I mean, Ugas. They're not that level. They're not even levels of prime Berto and Guerrero. So who are you going to put him in with? Tulani Mbenga, Lewis Crocker? Is that what we're going to have? Jerome Ennis versus Lewis Crocker live on DAZN, and Hearn will tell us, oh, I'm just setting him up for big fights. No chance. But the boxing public aren't very bright. They'll buy into it, because you'll be spun a yarn about how great Jerome Ennis is and how he could be undisputed. Undisputed doesn't mean anything now, because that division is washed. Welterweight's a dead division. And Spence and Conor Ben are in that awkward position where they may have to tread water for a year and a half, 2 years, until Teo comes up, Devin comes up, Ryan comes up, maybe even Tank comes up, Shakur comes up. What's that going to do for their legacy? What's that going to do for their skills? There isn't the time for that. So what do you do with Jerome Ennis? Welterweight can't be it for him, because there's nothing there. He can't make 140. He'll be too small at 154. So I can see why Al's okay letting him go, because Al's now shifted his focus to 154, to 135, and to 140. Because that's where the energy is. Welterweight's kind of a wrap. He can't get to the heavyweights now, obviously. He can't really get to the light heavyweights for obvious reasons. So he's focusing on the small guys. I said it in a previous episode. Saudi's going to have the big guys, America's going to have the small guys, and then everyone else will just kind of get in where they fit in. So if you ask me, like, Jerome Ennis going to Matchroom, it doesn't enhance their stable. It's just another body. It's another Conor Ben level fighter. That's not a game changer. You'll be told otherwise, but question the people who tell you otherwise, because they shouldn't be trusted. Shouldn't be trusted talking boxing. Probably shouldn't be trusted near a stove. Probably shouldn't be trusted near rope. Maybe shouldn't be trusted near schools. Don't trust them. Al Heyman's not letting you go if you're valuable. And I just think Jerome Ennis proved to be more inconvenience than anything in a division where there's no money left. That's the reality. There's no money left in that division. The fact that Robert Guerrero and Andre Berto are credible fighters in the top 50 of the welterweight division. The fact that Adrian Broner is a top 20 welterweight. should tell you all you need to know about 147 at the moment. 147's had a 187. It's dead. Dead. So Hearn can celebrate that because he knows the demographic it will appeal to. It'll appeal to the guys that eat raw meat and assume that, you know what I mean, this is a carnivore diet. I mean, not understanding that they've got to cook. No idea. Just those sort of headbangers. Are you allowed to say that? I don't know. Sorry, guys, if I wasn't meant to say that. But no, I'm not that impressed with that Hearn signing. It's just neither here nor there. Jerome Ennis needs some easy money. Hearn needed some kind of name to give him credibility, but there's no money in that. And that's the problem for Hearn. Eddie likes to do shows that make a profit. He won't make a loss on Jerome Ennis. He just will not. So Jerome's not going to get paid what Heyman was paying him. So let's see what happens. It's not the deal people think it is. So let's talk about the second Eddie Hearn own goal. So we've heard all this nonsense about Hearn and Chef Clark should fight Isaac Chamberlain and this, that, and the third. Only for Hearn to announce that Chef Clark is going to fight El Ozora for the British title. I don't mind either guy. El Ozora's a decent guy. Chef Clark's a decent guy. But those two fighting for a British title is a bit like... One of them? Maybe. Both of them on the same fight for a British title? Ooh. To be honest, I'd get it for the English and I'd get it for one of those trinket belts. But for the British title, where are you going to elevate the winner to? If El Ozora wins, what, you're going to have him fight for a European? Probably not. If Chev wins, fight for a European? Maybe, but not a guarantee. So how on earth is that a British title fight? Explain that to me. After all of the talk, Isaac won't. They held on to the belt till the last possible moment. Right, let's all take a step back here. And I can just tell you what I know for absolute certain. When Isaac won that British title, his stance was very simple in terms of his career. I will fight for the European next. If they can't get me the European title, I will fight Vidal. Why not? Yeah? Mark time until I can fight for either the European or the world title. He was clear about this. I don't think he said anything to contradict that. If I know that, Hearn knows that. So what's the fuss? Here's the game Eddie Hearn played on the Boxing Public. I'm going to walk you through it. Hearn was never going to have Chev in with Isaac. It's too much of a risk at this stage in Chev's development. Why would you set him up to fail? So you knew you were going to find a guy. And it had to be a Luke Watkins, an El Ozora. Who else was floating around in that weight class? Nah, not Jack Massey. It had to be that level of guy who's maybe four area level, English level, so reasonably credible. But it couldn't be anyone too competitive. Right? So how do you sell that? I've got to make the public believe we've tried to make huge fights for Chef Clark. So that when I do give you El Ozora, I say I tried to make that fight over there. You saw me try. When Hearn never tried. Chev and Ellis, from what I'm hearing right now, will make combined less than Isaac's going to get in his next fight. We're talking guarantees here, so the numbers stack up. They both combined are going to make less than Isaac for Isaac's next fight. So what offer would Eddie have made to Sky for Isaac to come on his platform? Would Eddie have paid 200 grand for Isaac Chamberlain? The answer to that is no. Because Eddie was, we would be there going, where am I going to make this money back? Especially on someone who I don't own and control. So Eddie was never going to put the money up for Isaac. Ben Shalom was never going to put the money up for Chev when he already has Vidal Riley, Jack Massey in-house. He doesn't need Chev. Ben Shalom doesn't need Chev. He can make British cruiserweight fights without Matchroom ever. Matchroom have had to go begging to Queensby and say, can we borrow El Zorro, please? Remember what happened last time El Zorro fought a Matchroom fighter? That wasn't pleasant to see. And if we're being honest, Queensbury saved Eddie Hearn because he was about to be put in a really awkward position because he would have had no option. Had El Zorro said no, you'd have to put Chev in with young, hungry animals like young Alois Jr. You'd have to put him in with young, hungry animals like, is it Tommy Fletcher? You'd have to put him in like, and so once you start moving on this, you end up at Nick Parker for the British title. We end up with Stephen Ward for the British title. And that would have been an even harder sell. He will watch how Hearn sells the life out of what Ellis did in Saudi and go, well, Jarrah Pattaya does that to anyone, so Ellis shouldn't be ashamed. That's the message you're going to get. And you're going to get that because he was always going to sell you an Ellis Zorro type fight. Chef Clark was never going to fight Chamberlain. Chamberlain was always too expensive. You can't fight Vidal because if Sky aren't playing ball with you, you're not going to have access to Vidal. Mikel the Wilds lost twice, so you couldn't get access to him. If you didn't have access to Sky, you don't have access to Jack Massey either. So Hearn is essentially stuck with a guy in Chev that he can't get fights for. And he knows that. And he played everyone by making out like he really wanted the purse bids. Purse bids happen when you don't come to a deal. If Eddie's got the money he says he has, look, we know Matchroom turning over tens of millions in profit. There's money to pay Isaac 200 grand to fight Chev. If you really want to make that fight can be made. Not one offer went in. Not one. Oh, we'll just wait till purse bids, knowing full well they had no interest in their guy fighting Isaac. They always wanted an El Zorro type guy. And the fans have fallen for it. Where I have some sympathy with Hearn is in the Dalton Smith, Adam Azim. But only a little bit. Because that was never on the cards. Anyone who understands boxing knows Azim, whether you think he beats Dalton Smith or not, is neither here nor there. The price it would cost for Adam Azim to beat Dalton Smith now wouldn't be worth it in the context of his whole career. Dalton Smith is older, physically mature. He's from a boxing family. Like he's born to box. Adam Azim's a super talented guy, but we still don't know what he's like when he gets pressured properly. So I get why you wouldn't make that fight. And Hearn can go through all the other ones. Fraser Clark, he's only ever done this purse bid thing when his fighters have all the cards in their favor. The only time he didn't do that was Chev and Isaac because he had no intention. Yeah? The earlier ones, he never had any intention of fighting those guys. He wanted to humiliate Sky. This one, it was a bait and switch. Yeah, we'll go to the purse bids for Chev and Isaac. We'll bid aggressively. Only to announce El Zorro. But that deal was done way before he started doing any of the press. But if you want to fall for it, that's entirely up to you. I don't get why people fall for these tricks. Hearn has never shown appetite to make big fights in the United Kingdom. Never. It's not his thing. And people say, oh, he tried to make Ben versus Eubank. Look at how he contorted the terms and conditions on that. It's time we just start treating Hearn like he is, man. Just selling snake oil. And he's a guy who understands his boxing empire is slowly, slowly diminishing. He's got Katie Taylor fighting in Village Halls. Do you remember when he was telling us Katie Taylor would headline the Aviva, Katie Taylor would headline Croke Park, and he's got her just fighting in Village Halls? People say she fought Madison Square Garden. They would never have done that if Serrano wasn't there. Katie Taylor, I know, is not helming anything. I'm not saying that because I don't like her. I'm just stating what it is. If you have to do an 8,000 capacity arena in Dublin, you're from Bray. That's home turf. That's home turf. Leo Cullen's filling 50,000 in the Aviva. He'll do that when Leinster play La Rochelle. 50,000 in the Aviva. You're telling me Katie Taylor, an Irish gold medalist, greatest women's boxer, well, second greatest after Kelly Harrington, if Kelly wins the gold this year. You're telling me they can't get her to fill an arena. That should tell you all you need to know. Matchroom is just the emperor's new clothes when it comes to boxing. They don't have stars. And actually, it's more a wider thing. There are fewer stars now in boxing than they were. And that's why you're going to see these guys get reheated, recycled, and replayed. Right? So Hearn will find a way to get Broner out to fight Ennis. He will. He'll just dig up all the old rogues and rascals he can. And then he'll be telling us Jerome Ennis is an all-time great. Man, let's pivot and talk about Hearn's third own goal. The idea of Eddie being able to make Crawford versus Boots Ennis. Okay? Think about this. Hearn is about to get two guys who have been traditionally overpaid. Now, you earn what you earn in the game, but they've been overpaid. And they've got that money off the top. Like, no contingencies, money off the top, right? Can Eddie Hearn find $3 million for Boots and $10 million for Crawford? Because DAZN ain't going to pay that. If you can't pay $200,000 for Chamberlain, you can't find that money for Crawford. No one's paying that, even on pay-per-view, to watch Crawford. And then if you sign Crawford, who are you going to have him fight after Boots? There's nothing left. Al controls 154. There's nothing at 147. These things are... And it's not that Hearn doesn't get it. He knows the game better than anyone else. But he's determined to lie to the fans. So when Hearn tries to con the fans, all you ever need to do is just look at his track record. What fights have ever come to fruition? He's been okay with the little guys, but no one wants to pay those little guys anyway. So, you know, if you're paying guys like Cal Yafai 30 or 40 grand, of course you're going to get him to fight, right? It's not hard. What big fights, what seminal fights has Hearn made? Okay, take his crown jewel, Joshua. Who's he fought since he lost to Usyk? Nothing of note. Whether he's been well paid for it, let's park that for a second, because he probably has been well paid. But Hearn can't make those fights. So when he tells you that Jerome Ennis beats Spence and Crawford, well, he should do, man. He's got like 8 or 9 years advantage on them. He should do. He doesn't have the mileage, so he should do. Will he get that chance? If Al wouldn't do it, why? What? Wait, what? If Al had everyone under control, and if Al still has control of that rematch clause between Spence and Crawford, what fight's Eddie making? Yeah, I think your own Ennis beats Crawford and Spence. Yeah, they got to fight each other. So how are you going to overcome that? You're not. But like I said, Hearn talks and fans just jump on it. Oh my God, please make the fight, Eddie. Please make the fight, mate. Oh, mate, I can't believe this. Oh my God, only Eddie could make it happen. I don't believe half these accounts are real. They can't be, because the level of stupidity in boxing would strip down your faith in humanity. But I've burnt up enough emotional capital talking about this guy. I'm going to summarize everything I feel about Hearn right now by saying this. As much as he annoys me, as much as I think he's a bit of a scumbag, and as much as I understand his game, like, he wouldn't have the same energy face to face. If you caught him on one of his runs and said, listen, talk, the energy would be different. But here are the things I want to give Hearn credit for. That man knows how to protect the valuation of Matchroom. We'll come on to whether Matchroom will sell or not in another episode, but he's worked his backside off to turn that into a multi-100 million pound company, and you've got to rate that. And I'll always give him the respect for that. Right? The other thing you got to give Hearn credit for is he knows most boxing fans are bitches. He knows, I think, like in gay parlance, most boxing fans would be I think it's sub bottom. That's what they would be. He knows that. And he exploits it to his advantage. So all of you guys, by being submissive and weak, men and women, I'm equal opportunities, by being submissive and weak, you give him that fuel to become a multimillionaire. You're the guys that are making him rich. But then you're also mostly the same people who complain that the rich get richer, yet you don't understand your role in this because you support stupidity. No, everything I've said so far is reasoned. Hearn has just played the fans again. And who wins at the end of the day? He does. Because it's all money in his pocket. And none of you seem to get that. But, hey, we move on. Let's switch lanes and talk about Frank. So Frank's kind of two main cash cows, if you look at the last 5 years. Vastly different fortunes at the moment, it seems. So Tyson Fury, obviously the presser at Morecambe the other day. First things first, credit to Devsani. Like, to see how far he's come, definitely since the pandemic, and to see that he's trusted by Queensbury to be a visible face, I really respect that. And credit to him for making that happen. I don't think anyone handed it to him. Like, how long has he been working with Frank? Decade? It goes to show, and I wish people understood this. In boxing, you may see stuff happening today, and everyone wants what you've got today. But they don't want all those steps it took to get there. Like, I'll bump into people, they go, do you know what, mate, I'd love to have a pod like yours. And I go, okay, are you prepared to do 300 and something of your own episodes? And then are you prepared to do 140 odd episodes with two of your mates? And are you prepared to use all of those as a learning experience? On top of that, are you prepared to go out in the world of boxing and meet people and build relationships and build trust and talk and learn and teach and give of yourself? Are you prepared for that? Getting home at 2:30 in the morning. Are you prepared for having your hands, your wrists, your elbows, your shoulders smashed through on the pads? And then once most people see the price it costs, then maybe not. I'll just consume the pod. But most people want the attention that comes with it. They don't really want to do it. They just want the attention. They want to feel important. But you look, a lot of this stuff takes decades. Decades. And in a world where people want instant gratification, that baffles people. So credit to Dev. I thought he was really good at that presser as well. I think he's become increasingly poised and composed up there. So yeah, I enjoyed that. Not necessarily interested in anything Tyson's got to say anymore, because I'm like, mate, get the fight done and just get your career wrapped up. Let's all just move past this now, because it drags out. Thought it was just really interesting that, you know, Sugar Hill, you know, when invited to expound on some insight, probably came at it from a position I thought he would, just being really basic. And so I'm always surprised when people tell me this guy's the best trainer in the world. I think he's a good trainer, but we put these sort of unrealistic expectations on trainers that aren't real. Like 90 to 95% of what happens in boxing is down to the guy in the ring. That's why the trainer gets 10%. No idea why the manager gets their cut, but that's by the by. But Fury's not telling us anything we didn't know. Now, quite frankly, I just think, you know, engagement farming by their side. So, look, just get that fight done. Hopefully Fury wins, and then that's the whole Usyk story done. And we can just get to Fury Joshua and just wrap this era up for good. Because it's been a massive disappointment. It's been nothing short of embarrassing. Talking of embarrassing, how can you have a video of Anthony Yard saying he's a free agent and Frank saying, oh no, he's not? And it's weird, right? So here's the weird thing. We've never seen them out of sync. We've never seen Frank Tunde and Anthony Yard out of sync. Like, This doesn't happen on that side. That had always been one of the more stable relationships in boxing. Frank took care of Anthony, gave him the career he asked for, which was low risk until the belts are on the line, then make me the most money. And I think he's done that. So for Anthony Yard to be in his car saying, I no longer have a contract, I was like, oof. I remember just seeing the going, Frank ain't going to like that, is he? Sure enough, Frank did not like that. And if it turns out Anthony Yard does have a contract with Frank that's still got fights to run, I think it's going to get very tricky for Anthony Yard. Frank's not a guy you want to cross like that. So unless there's an apology and an explanation, it could get tricky. Because what Frank's saying is they've agreed the fight between him and Boatsy. So why would Anthony Yard rock the boat? Like, what are you going to do? Go over to Sky? I mean, you're Anthony Yard. Like, you don't need to go anywhere. The fights will come to you. People want to fight you. Why not just do that? But I'm not close enough to the details to say whether he's right or whether he's wrong. I wouldn't want to disrespect that. I just found that odd that they weren't on the same page. Because let's be honest, let's break down where Anthony Yard needs to get to. He needs to prove he's the best in this country. I think he needs to beat Josh. So once he does that, then he's looking to fight for the fragmented belts. And at that point, it won't really matter who he fights. I imagine Beterbiev will ride off into the sunset. Bivol may hold on to a belt, may move down to 168 to fight Canelo. So 175 will be wide open. And there'll be opportunities to get stuck in. There may even be an opportunity for like a Ben Whittaker if he's brought along quickly enough to fight for a belt. So there are loads of opportunities for Anthony Yard. This is not the time to move promotional stables. As long as Frank's got access to Saudi, world title fights can happen for him. So, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Hopefully someone hasn't given him bad advice, because you don't want to be burning bridges with Frank. It would be my opinion on this. That would be my take. Do you know what? Today, no one's escaping, man. No one is free from it. So, Sky and Boxer can also get drawn into this discussion, because we've also got to look at them and say, what the hell's going on? So, I would have expected Ben Shalom to come out and say, Isaac's not going to fight Chev. We're not putting him in for the purse bid, and here's why. Instead, it was Hennessy that came out and said, this isn't happening. So, who does what at Sky? You know, most right-minded people now want to understand, what does Mick actually do at Sky? Is Mick promoting? Is Mick advising on fights? What is Mick actually doing behind the scenes? And what is everyone doing behind the scenes? We have no idea, because we put a lot of pressure on Ben Shalom, but now I'm asking the real question, how much does Ben actually get to determine? And how much do other people get to determine? Because, I don't know, it just feels, when Hennessy had to issue that statement, it's almost like they didn't have confidence in the machine, and they said, we need to protect our asset, which is Isaac in this. And so Hennessy and Isaac went to bat. I didn't see Sky and Boxer jump in and defend their guy. I just didn't. Now you saw Isaac jump on, and he wasn't even talking about Chev, really. He was talking about Vidal. So I'm just like, well, Brody, what the hell's going on? And I've always felt this campaign by Hearn against Shalom, and in many ways it is bullying. Be very clear about what this is. It is bullying. Eddie and Frank Smith targeted a campaign to bully Ben. And I said, well, why would you want to do that? So here's the reality. Hearn understands and Hearn knows his biggest moments have not come on DAZN. Hearn's biggest moments, Hearn's greatest moments, the things Hearn will always be remembered for, happened on Sky. So if you really want to drive your valuation up, you just go to Sky, because you get your visibility back, you get your engine back. You know, how many stars would Hearn have made if he had stayed committed to Sky? We can only speculate, but more than he's done now. There are people in Sky who miss Eddie. There are people in Sky who want him back because they thought it was better back then. Now, I don't know if there are these back channels that say, look, if you can make the case for Ben being incompetent, we can say we're not renewing the contract, we can bring you back. I've always felt that's where it's going to go, because You can't have all of your other business on Sky and just not your boxing. And DAZN don't need Matchroom anymore. I don't know if that makes sense. They don't need Matchroom because they'd rather license the fights than actually put them on. Just from a balance sheet perspective, it makes more sense. What DAZN are realizing very quickly is boxing's a very expensive sport when you get it wrong. Unlike football, because all the risk in football is carried elsewhere. Whereas with boxing, you can carry that risk on your balance sheet. And if it goes wrong, it really hurts. And I think it's hurt them over the last 5 or so years. But coming back to this Hearn bullying, and like I said, it is bullying. That's exactly what this is. It is bullying. Because Hearn would have known that he didn't want to make the Clark Chamberlain fight, and he wanted to make the Zorro fight instead, because they had planned this, man. I don't care what anyone said. This was planned. Yeah, it was planned and it was known. It was just what was a ruse we could get away with to show this. And in the meantime, give Ben Shalom another kicking. And Ben knows this to be true as well. And I think it's all done with the aim of Hearn getting back in with Sky. Will that happen or not? I don't know. He burned a lot of bridges at Sky too. But I feel for Ben, because until someone comes out and says, here's how it all works at Sky, we have no context by which to understand this. It all feels a bit shambolic. And maybe that's being reflected in the quality of the product as well. I don't know, but I'm not getting a warm, fuzzy feeling about Sky and Boxer right now, which is a shame, because they wanted to do the right thing. I saw Shalom on a business pod, and he was talking about these things he wanted to do. Access, diversity, innovation. For him, they're his brand pillars at Boxer. Pinch of salt, yeah, but credit for actually having those. And, you know, you see him trying a little thing. He's tried to be different by not getting drawn into the head-to-head. And I think that's really smart, not giving it energy. But what he can't do is he can't be silent. So the Ben Shalom dilemma is this. When you say nothing, Hearn fills the void. When you say something, Hearn fills the void. So what works better in boxing is that you say something. And I've seen it done to Hearn before, where he tried to be slick and people just didn't give in to the energy. So they just drained the energy from what he said. And so he couldn't have a back and forth. And that upsets him, because remember, he's a child of privilege. And children of privilege love to pretend to be the victim of something. Because when you're a child of privilege, what are you really a victim of? Money? Okay, fair enough. But I've sort of gone around the houses and said, you know, our televised promoters are letting us down at the moment. But hopefully we get some order after all this undisputed stuff is done. Because, like, Turkey's got people twerking for the gram right now. And there's nothing wrong with that, but this isn't going to be good for boxing long term. What could be good for boxing, this follows up the episode that I did with Alfie Warren. When you start to look at Warren Boxing Management, and then you look at GBM on the other side, and I'm not saying that they're rivals, that's not that what I'm trying to imply here, but you've got GBM, and they're doing a televised small hall product, and you've got Warren Boxing Management now doing the small hall televised product via Box Nation. We should all hope that they succeed. And the reason I say we should all hope they succeed is this. It could move the dynamics of small hall boxing, because there are a lot of times we watch mainstream televised boxing and we go, these guys aren't good enough to be on TV yet. If we can give them that kind of mezzanine layer, that bit in the middle where they can still be seen by an audience broader than York Hall, the Victoria Warehouse, Ponds Forge, they can still be seen by a broader audience and, you know, still get that kind of televised experience. I think that'd be a good stepping stone. And when you're ready, you get moved up. The same way the WWE of NXT. I don't know why we don't do that in boxing. Instead, we push these kids onto an audience before they're ready. I always say the art of being a professional is when I see you for the first time as a pro, there should be a polish that says you're a cut above. And we don't have that. And until we have that, I don't see what the point is. And how do you build that? You build that by making all your mistakes in the shadows. And then when we see you on TV, we know you're ready. And we just don't have that because everyone's in a rush to show us the next big thing. And no boxing fan has ever said, show me the next big thing being really mediocre. It's always been like, no, show me the next big thing. But when they come out, they need to look like they're ready. Otherwise, I don't need to see them. But what I want to do is I just want to wrap up on a clip I saw of Ben Davidson, right? And I think Ben Davidson was trying to explain what him and Lee Wiley do as a training team. And he said something along the lines of, and I'm going to misquote it, but I don't know if he mentioned it in terms of Pep telling Ronaldo or someone telling Ronaldo. Maybe he said, no one tells Cristiano Ronaldo to kick the football with this part of his foot. Right? And he said, well, that's like us. We're like Pep. We teach people how to play the game. And I stopped and I went, this is when... One of my bugbears in boxing is boxing's not full of the most intelligent people. There are a lot of trainers who are not very intelligent. They know boxing, and you know, anything outside of that, they'll fall over, right? But they're not the sharpest tools in the boxing. There's nothing wrong with that. They're still good people. But on social media, people in boxing try and pretend that boxing is this really intricate, complicated sport. And only they really understand it. So they'll post loads of clips about stuff in the hope of convincing newbies that, oh, look at this, it's a really hard sport. And I see that, and I'm like, guys, just stop, man. It's only boxing. It's not a hard sport. Yeah? I hit you, I stop you hitting me, and we dance again until the ref tells us to stop. Boxing 101. But within that, there's a lot of work you have to do, right? There's a lot of work you have to do. If you're not in range, you're going to get smoked. So you're trying to find the most efficient way to get in and out of range. You can't be macro on things. You have to be micro, because if you're not micro, if you're not in the detail, it's very hard to affect a strategy. So the reason they were horribly wrong about Pep, and I know this from people who work at Man City, Pep is detail obsessed. He will move you 6 inches one way or the other so you're in the right place to receive that ball. They always use the example of Raheem Sterling receiving the ball on the half turn, having to learn how to receive the ball on the half turn. We've all seen that clip. That's detail. That's not macro. That's micro. Because you can have that macro vision, but I've got to tweak what you do so that it's an efficient representation of that macro. But it shows that these guys don't understand anything. They just talk about stuff from a basis of, well, these boxing fans are stupid anyway. They're not going to get it. Or either that, or they're thick. But I get tired of people overcomplicating what's quite a simple sport, actually. Boxing is a really simple sport. But everyone tries to overcomplicate it because everyone wants to try and front like they're cleverer than they are. It's not that. A football manager has an outsized effect on their team's performance versus a boxing trainer. There's a huge difference in terms of like that overall performance. But I have a bigger effect on the mentality as a boxing coach. So I can impact mental and physical, whereas a coach can impact physical and tactical a lot more than he can mental. Because there are too many minds you'd have to control, or influence, I should say. And I just wish these guys like Ben Davidson, instead of trying to prove they're the supposed smartest guys in the room, were just honest about boxing and say, you know, it's quite a simple sport. Like Roy Keane would say, you get in that ring, you hit them, you stop them hitting you, and you keep going until the referee stops. Boxing 101. Now, if you want to overcomplicate that and talk about 17 phase attacks and talk about all this other stuff, you can do. But when your fighter's getting pummeled in that corner and you're trying to read some source code to them, they're not going to get it. So you've got to be able to reduce it to the most simple things that they can digest in a minute and act on. And I wish more people understood that. And I wish more boxing coaches stopped trying to be smart asses. Because that's then what's created this surge in stupid videos. You know, you see them on your Facebook Reels or your Instagram Reels. And it's normally some kind of grey-haired guy that no one knows. And we can't find him. We can't find a record of him doing anything. And he's there trying to show people how to do a jab to the body. I'm like, and this, I can't say whether it's right or whether it's wrong, because they kind of, there's no right or wrong way. There's just the way you can make work and the way you can't make work. But they all come on and it's just, oh, how would you describe them as? Boxing hipsters. That's what they are. They're boxing hipsters. They're up their own backsides in terms of they think their knowledge is important. Sometimes I sit there and go, is my knowledge important? Like, if people did enjoy this, if the numbers crashed doing this, I could happily stop talking boxing. It's not that deep, as my friend Frankie Hanratty would say. It's just not that deep. But on that note, I want to tap out and enjoy my weekend. I want to say, look, I'm sure I'll be back soon. If you haven't caught the Alfie Warren episode, just jump all over that, because the feedback has been really, really good. I didn't know how that was going to land. Because I know what it sounded like when I first took the audio in, so I was nervous about whether I could get it down to a digestible format. But a lot of people like the Alfie Warren one, changing tempo, changing kind of subject matter, changing energy. And like I said, Alfie's a good guy. Like, he's trying to do a lot of good things in boxing. So if you haven't caught that, make sure you jump on that. It's the previous episode. And also go all the way back, man. Like I said, the aim of these episodes is that you can go back in time and listen to them, and hopefully they don't age badly. So on that note, I'll say, enjoy the rest of your day, whatever you end up doing, and take care.